Good.
Hello.
Hello.
How do you do?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Come sit down.
Yeah, so many.
Yes, I got it in my bed.
Yeah,
I have a fever. So,
I understand, but a little green ganja soaked in blood is an excellent remedy.
Everything.
White rum, green ganja.
Everything. Oh, yes.
So tell me your name.
My name is Alton Bizzle.
How do you do?
I'm okay.
And tell me what you do.
I'm the principal and special project administrator for Cornerstone Ministries. I'm responsible for all the training programs that we administer, whether it's in the prisons or in communities or in industries.
So my interest is this rehabilitation focus
Yes. That's
become central to the correctional department. How do you relate to that?
Well, I could speak to it from what we have been doing in the prisons. When we came to correctional services, I think it's about 1993 that we came to correctional services. We started out in the industry, in the wood industry training. And we brought that concept of a one-day day release program into the prisons, where we raised funds and we built a wood shop at South Camp at our correctional center. We built a classroom for training. And the inmates would come for classes one day per week. It's a 9-to-5 day for training, where they'll go to core courses, calculating and drawing, maths, Christian principles, and technical drawing. And for the remaining 4 days, they'd go to the wood shop, where they get their practical training. In 1994, we went to Tower Street at our correctional center, formerly General Penitentiary. The same concept, we were given by the government a 7-acre complex known as the Brickyard. When we got it, it was a hollow piece of land, and we managed to transform that to funds raised internationally and locally into a training complex. And so we added to the curriculum from cabinet and journey, added welding technology, agricultural science. So we're offering 3 programs. We are training every day for the week. So we have 5 different groups of trainees, Mondays to Fridays, 2 groups of cabinet and joining, 2 groups of agriculture, 1 group for welding technology. Same concept of the day release, even in the 4 days, they'll go over to the training complex where they're given their practical training. We employ only trained teachers, university or college graduates. Our basis is Christian principles. We find that if you make a good tradesman out of any one of these persons and you have not changed your attitude and your thinking, then we'd have failed, we'd have lost. And so we focus on attitudinal changes, character changes, and we use the Christian principles. We're a Christian organization, non-denominational. We have all different norms working with us, but we use the concept of anger management, of forgiveness, and these are the type of values and ethics that we try to bring across to the inmates that we train the prisoners. We have long, the success has been good. You know, we have a lot of success stories. One of our public relations officer, Noah Cornerstone, is an inmate who was in our program for 3 years and came out. And they did very well in our program, came out and has been with us for some time, and we have employed him as our peer officer. In addition to what we've been doing in the prison, our head office is located in Crossroads area. We set up a halfway house, what we call a restoration house, because we found that we were training persons in the prisons. In the middle of their training, they'll get paroled or they'll finish their sentence. And what do? Well, we had a parallel program running outside the prison. And inmates would come out, they'd stay at our halfway house, and they'd be able to complete their training. We have been experimenting with the concept, looking at the success that we have had and the factors that militated against those successes. We have been exploring the concept of a therapeutic approach. At one point, we were given an entire section inside the prison at Thomas Street and Cultural Center, known as the pre-release. and we had all our trainers inside that area, and we were able to work with them on a 24-hour basis. So we didn't have the challenges of lockdown and opening up and all that issue. We were dealing with those persons. They come to in the morning, they get up at a certain time, devotion with them, they get ready, have their breakfast, they go over for the training and all that. That worked well for some time until the problems inside correctional services. Eventually, that just went straight down.
Say more about the problems. What was the story? What took
place? For one, you know, we came to correctional services and there was a particular prevailing culture there. And it was difficult. It was, I'm saying, it was difficult to change that culture because it was 200 years of lockdown down, beat them. And we thought, listen, you know, the fact that they've come to prison, that's punishment enough. And so for us, it was chipping at the wall with a chisel, you know, over the 10 years that we've been inside correctional services, trying to work with the correctional officers to change that culture. To some extent, the correctional officers felt that, you know, inmates were getting more than they were. You know, their working environment, they felt that nothing was happening for them. The program that we're offering actually was open to correctional officers. And we had correctional officers who took part in the training program. So that was one of the problems with the correctional officers, you know, they came late for work and all that, and inmates would be open up late. Sometimes they just come to the class and they close down school time because the rain starts drizzling and stuff like that. We tried to incorporate the training with production, right? It is a work-study program that we're doing. And when we run the brickyard, we're responsible for marketing the goods, for procurement. We make block making. We had, April for bees. Mm-hmm. I always mix them up. Mm-hmm. We had bees for honey. And so we had a lot of products that we sell to the community. But all the funds that we generated, the revenue, was then plowed back into the program at the brickyard. Eventually, we had what is known as professional services production cost that came into scene. And the focus was shift. Our focus was training and rehabilitation. And the generation of revenue was a side thing to ensure that we can make the program sustainable. But our focus was not profit maximization. But for COSPROD, their mandate was profit maximization. And so what happened, we tried to coexist with COSPROD, right? And eventually...
Say the group that's...
COSPROD.
COSPROD.
It's Correctional Services Production.
I see.
It's an acronym for that. So we tried to coexist. Eventually what we did was to give up responsibility for production and sales of items that came out of the training. We gave that up. And we said, okay, COSPROD, you take that. We will just do the training aspect. We'll train your workforce for you. But the problem still continued in the sense that it was a burden on us to raise funds, to maintain the machine, to replenish training materials when we're not the one getting the revenue. It's going to cost bad. And we're saying, you should be purchasing these things now. You have the production. You have all those things. It's crazy. If we plant a plot of some crop, of 100 pounds of cabbage, our trainees, our teachers that we employ, and they prepare the loan, 100 pounds of cabbage. The cabbage sold. We need more seeds. And they're saying to us to find seeds. And so that kind of challenge, you know, where we're saying our focus is on additional training and their profit maximization.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's
a part of correctional services that it's supposed to be some sort of executive arm, and they have a CEO. That's the one.
Sounds like they just destroyed your program.
Basically, that's what they did. Basically, what happened, our program was destroyed by COSPROD and by some of the challenges with the correctional officers in the prisons.
And so where do you stand now?
But right now, we have not left correctional services. We have kept dialogue with them. Some 4 years ago, I believe, IDB had an interest in the crime in Jamaica, the crime rate, and they developed a program that they call the Citizen Security and Justice Program.
IDB?
Yes, Inter-American Development Bank. So a program in partnership with IDB and the government, a program that was developed called the Citizen Security and Justice Program. And, you know, they seek to focus on correctional services, the security forces, and the justice system. They were looking for some sort of program, some sort of concept, some sort of rehabilitation program in the prison, and we were recommended to IDB. And so they came to us to find out what we could do for rehabilitation in the prison, and we we proposed to them a therapeutic, what we call a transformation center, right, where young offenders or first-time offenders would not be sent into a maximum security prison. Because you take a teacher, someone that was in their class some time ago, purchased a stolen car. But I'm not sure whether he knew it was a stolen car. We sent that teacher, a trained teacher, into general penitentiary with hardened criminals. We would make a criminal of that teacher. Right? And that's what happened. So this program, this transformation center, is supposed to be a 24-hour program where these persons are sent to this transformation center, and it's a family atmosphere that we try to develop, and we will be employing three concepts: the training concept from Cornerstone Ministries, a concept from Dunkin' Memorial in Michigan, I believe it is. It's a drug rehab program. And another rehab concept from Bridges of America, which is an inner healing program. So we will be dovetailing all three concepts to come up with a real full-fledged 24-hour program that can impact the lives of the inmates that comes inside this institution.
So your company is independent of corrections.
We're independent.
You just contract with them.
Yes, and contract and petition, because there's nothing formal. There's no formal agreement with us and consular service. We're really just offered our service.
I see. So no money passes from
all passes from consular service to us.
And you have to independently then raise your own money.
We have to independently
work with corrections.
To work with consular services. And that's what we've been doing for the past 8 to 10 years.
And how many of you are there? That is, how big is this enterprise that you represent?
Presently, we have over 20 members of staff, but, you know, consider we have also programs in the community, because we started out in the industry, went into the prisons, and we took the concept in the prison, realized that the prison was a community like any other community. And so we took that very same concept into community development. And so we have over 20 members of staff now. When we were booming at Tower Street and South Camp, and the program was growing, we had at least 25 teachers. At least 15 of the 25 would be full-time teachers, and another 10 part-time teachers who were working in and out of the prison programs.
And why was it that when you got into your struggle with cost prod, how long ago was that?
That might have been, let me see, 94, 90, might have been about 97, 98 when it started.
So why didn't the administration of the corrections department protect you in that situation? Why did they let you get destroyed?
It's a very interesting question. It's a very interesting question because I take my hat off to the commissioner. He's for rehabilitation and he supported us 100%. But I believe that, as I understand it, that the commissioner does not have total control over CASPAD, you know, and it seems to me, and this might not be so, that there, you know, CASPAD is governed by, you know, higher authority, and so there's a constant conflict, in my observation, you know, with what is happening at Ground Zero, as opposed to what this higher authority wants to see come from CASPAD. So I think the commissioner tried to protect us, and you know, he's not open to suggestions. He made a lot of suggestions as to what could be done to make the program work and to cause Cornerstone and cause CASPAD to coexist, but it just didn't happen.
CASPAD, can you place CASPAD for me in the hierarchy of Jamaica ministries and institutions?
CASPAD, as I said, it's an executive, some sort of executive body, which it's a brainchild, as I understand it, of the former Minister of Security.
So it's under the Ministry of Security?
It's under the Ministry of Security. And it's a brainchild of the former Minister of Security, Mr. Night. And so the board members for CASPAD, they were appointed by the minister, the then minister. And so I think to a great extent that should explain the difficulties.
explains your lack of difficulty.
Would you permit me to take your picture?
Sure.
So now, tell me your name again.
Alton Griffith.
Give me a smile, Alton. Think about cost for us.
Oh, shit. This is my cost for us. I like that one.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Yes, thank you so much.
Anything else you want to tell us?
I guess it's related to the struggles and, you know, the finances that we the fact that we have to raise all our funds, and the struggles to pay salaries. You know, we find that in the past, you know, persons are willing to pay for materials for training, or they're willing to pay for the equipment for training. But then, what about you need the human resource for the training? They'll pay for a teacher. You need someone to coordinate the program. You need someone to run the office. You need an accountant to run the books, because you're going to require a certain type of accounting records.
Would you like a hot or a cold drink?
I'll have hot too, why not?
Coffee?
Whatever he has, I'll have.
I'm having tea.
Guess what
he wants.
Tea is fine. A little white rum and a little green ginger. That's a joke. That's a joke.
Green ginger. That's one of the major challenges that we face is finances for our program. You know, we're faith ministry. Mm-hmm. And we depend on God, and so we're always struggling. We're always struggling to find salary, and but that's a major challenge.
Do you have any volunteers in the program then?
No. In the past, we've had a lot of volunteers. We do have some volunteers now. Mm-hmm. We do get persons from Peace Corps that comes in to work with us, and we have mission teams that comes out several times for the year to help us out. But we have. Staff members that we have to pay. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just a challenge to see these persons and not know where the salary is coming from, you know. I know I've worked there for some time where there's no salary to pay me.
Mm-hmm. But you haven't mentioned in your discussion the computer side of your training, which I know you've done some.
Yes. We having run the 3-year program, we and all our trainers, they were going back to industry, but they were training in the prisons and the community. And what we found that these persons that we trained to be floor workers were being thrust in supervisory positions because they were light years ahead of their peers. We didn't train them to be supervisors. So we called them back, and eventually what we did is we gave a fourth year in the program in computer-aided designing and entrepreneurship training. So we set up a computer lab, and these persons coming for one more year, where we give them extensive training in computer designing. And we also started offering a host of other computer training, you know, the Microsoft Office suite and accounting packages and so on. So we offer training to the wider communities and to the prisons. We have explored, written several proposals to take computers in the prisons, because we do have inmates who come from the prison to Cornerstone for computer training and internet exposure. And we have explored the concept of taking computers in the prison, but finances has kept us back.
Finances, not bureaucracy or permissions, just finances.
Just finances to run the computer program. That's how we make, because we sent a proposal to Mrs. Rowan to take computers inside the prisons. Yes.
Excellent. Well, very nice to meet you.
Yes, nice meeting you too.
And hope I get a chance to work with you sometime.
Sure. Okay.
Where is the brickyard? Is it?
It's Tower Street.
In the Tower Street environment?
Yes, but it's across from the prison. There's a tunnel that leads from the prison to on the ground. So inmates will just walk on the tunnel and they write us in the training complex.
Very interesting. And so it's still there and functioning.
It's still there, but things are down. You know, since we gave up, we had to back out because of the challenge that we were facing. And we were losing integrity of the program, and we couldn't stand. We had to be good stewards of the person who were funding us. And the program just wasn't working out. But things are really done now. Nothing much is happening.
So if one were to walk over to the brickyard, you wouldn't see anything?
You wouldn't see much. You'll see the wood shop, you'll see the welding shop, you'll see the cabinet making and joining shop, you'll see the block making and all that. But things just kind of
happen. People.
You wouldn't see much happening.
Right.
You wouldn't see much happening. And when things are booming, we had over 100 persons, 200 persons in the brickyard at the time that we were running it in mix.
So it seems a little mysterious. Cost came in and wiped you out. But they don't wind up getting any product. So it's a dead loss for everyone.
Yes, for everyone. It's a dead loss for everyone.
That's tragic.
It's very tragic. Very tragic.
So we'll fix that.
Sure. Look forward to that. All right? We'll talk to you.
Okay.